and welcome to Dynasty as They Wanna Be, a podcast where we drill into every episode of the iconic 1980s television series Dynasty. I'm your host, Derek J. Lang, and with me is my co-host, Kyler K. Jafari.
Merry Sunday at the convention center.
Yeah, so if you're listening at home or in your car or in your bathtub, we are recording our first ever live episode at NostalgiaCon 80s. It's the first ever convention celebrating 80s pop culture. And, you know, Dynasty is all about the 80s, so we had to come to NostalgiaCon. So we're so thankful and happy to be here and to be part of the festivities. It's been a real wild weekend. They've had the cast of Dallas reunite, not the cast of Dynasty, unfortunately, maybe next year.
So I guess we're here to represent.
We are. We're here to represent the Dynasty love. And cast members from Dukes of Hazzard were here. Corey Feldman, of course, made an appearance. They have a boombox museum that's really cool. What other 80s things are going on here that caught your attention?
Well, there was a car show.
Oh, yeah. You love a car show.
We had a Mercury Grand Marquis station wagon with classic wood-sided paneling, you know.
Sexy.
But I think that leads us to another thing about, like, what is so 80s about Dynasty, you know? I think you've misleadingly entitled this Cat Fights and Champagne and Caviar.
I knew you were going to call me out. Yeah, so I had to come up with a title for the panel, and I called it Champagne, Cat Fights, and couture, not caviar, because nobody's eaten caviar yet.
We are in the middle of season two here, and this is still 1981, and it doesn't feel very 1980s, at least not stereotypically.
Yeah, well, and what's interesting about this week's episode that we're going to talk about is it's basically like the Christmas episode because it aired December 16th, 1981. So this was the last episode of 81. So, but it doesn't have anything to do with the holidays or Christmas or anything like that.
It's not a very special episode.
I mean, there's a miscarriage in this episode, so it's not very jolly whatsoever.
Merry Christmas.
But yeah, I mean, I think we've said it before, but like to me, this show typifies the 80s because it started in 81 and it ended in 89, and it was setting trends in terms of fashion, and I think it was also responding to what was going on in the world, especially when it comes to like greed is good and just like
wealth
sociopolitically.
And power. Yeah. But I think there's an issue here because Dynasty kind of approaches the 80s from a couple different directions. And the first one is that Dynasty is ultimately a very adult show. It's not the Ghostbusters Saturday morning cartoon rendition of the 80s that we all kind of remember.
Yeah.
Or at least is popularly identified.
Yeah, people have like romanticized the 80s because like downstairs at this convention there's like guys dressed as Ghostbusters and people dressed as Marty McFly, which is like fun and awesome. I love those movies. But there are these elements of the 80s that we seem to forget sometimes when we're being nostalgic.
Yeah, I think the other side of it too is the 80s in general, we kind of think of as really 1985 through 1991.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm saying 91 not to be cheeky, but it's like there was like this sort of bleed with the color palettes and the clothing styles and just sort of the general attitudes that were much more upbeat. And here we're like embroiled in season two where it's still very like that 80s malaise in the beginning, which is sort of like we're all just still eating the leftovers from 1978. You know, there's still like some hairdos and like the tans and browns and earth tones.
Or like when they go to like a disco.
Yeah. So it's like very interesting to sort of see like how that still kind of carry forward. And it's not really what we call the 80s in today's imagination. But so here we are. We're in the seventh episode of season two.
Well, I don't know if it's coming across on the microphone, but Kyler is cosplaying a little bit here as Stephen Carrington. I could hear your leather jacket kind of like squeaking on the mic. So if you're listening, that's what that is.
I'm sorry. I'll send it out for polishing later. It won't happen again.
But yeah, I guess we should like get into this week's episode, which is, yeah, from the second season, episode 7. Should we just get into it?
Party on, dudes.
So the episode is called The Miscarriage because, as we thought was going to happen last week, Crystal has a...
She loses the baby. You know, this is... It's sort of like soap opera standard fare in a way, but it's pretty high up there. It's rather extreme. And also it is incited by Alexis. And this might be her most dastardly thing she ever does. And this is kind of the first thing she ever does. So it's interesting, like, she starts off, like, really high here on this one.
Yeah, we talked about it last week, and it was really evil. I kind of don't want to dwell on it. I mean, there are several scenes with Crystal in the hospital, and yeah, she loses the baby. I don't think there's a lot to discuss.
On the top line, it's extreme and dramatic, but to actually see it play out in the episode is not as interesting as everything else that's going on.
Yeah, we're in NostalgiaCon. It's supposed to be fun. No,
we're supposed to be talking about that.
Yeah, so it just so happens that this episode ended up on the weekend that we're doing this episode. But I think we just move on to something far more fun and fabulous, and that is Fallon Carrington Colby after her salacious one-night stand with Dr. Nicholas Toscani.
Well, and I think we've talked about her before, and she went off in daddy land for a little while, and then she kind of came back the last couple episodes, and here she's sort of reclaiming that, like, second wave feminism thing that she's been doing, where it's like, you know, women can not only be divorced and going to work, but now they can also enjoy sex and
when they're
be
married.
Liberated. And, yeah. And so she's sort of like taken on this whole like self-objectification in a way where she thinks that, you know, she can just take Nick to bed and that's going to be her big power move. And it's kind of funny because at the end of the episode, he kind of gives her short shrift because she's like, oh, well, when am I coming over? And he's like, I'll decide when that's going to happen. And so it kind of gets reversed on her at the end of the episode. So.
Yeah, no, she's totally pissed at the end. And she learns a little bit more than I think anybody else in the Dynasty universe has learned about Nicholas Toscani's past. She sees this picture of his brother who... is from another mother or different father?
No, he actually says, yeah, we're from another father, which is interesting because supposedly Fallon might be too.
Mm-hmm. So they have that in common other than their hot sexual appetites. But but yeah, so it's kind of nice to have Fallon back kind of slinking around and doing whatever she wants. And, you know, Jeff is still just... slobbering away and upset with her, and he knows what's going on. He confronts her and he can totally tell that she's stepped out on him.
Crystal lost the baby.
I'm sorry for her.
Are you?
Yes. But Jeff, I'm really very tired. I'd like to get some sleep. I'll go to the hospital and visit her tomorrow and tell her how sorry I am she lost the baby, okay?
What did you lose last night, Fallon? Your amateur standing.
And the other person who can tell, which is so funny, is her mother, Alexis. She sees her doing the walk of shame.
Well, she pulls up and, like, what is... Was she traded in the Doom buggy? It's now it's turned into an Alfa Romeo or something, and she's still got the silver pumps on and last night's dress, and it's pretty obvious, and Alexis knows exactly what's going on here.
Yeah, and she even tells her, she says, I've stepped out of beds like that in the morning, just like you have. And Fallon tells her to just go stuff it. She's still upset with her for being gone for 16 years, but it is nice to see Alexis trying to, like, care for Fallon, because up until now, she's spent all of her attention on Steven.
I still think she's just trying to dig her claws in. You know, I think Alexis is looking for an opportunity anywhere she can find it. And I think she kind of gave up when Fallon didn't want anything to do with her in the prior episodes. So I think at this point, she's just trying to be nosy.
What did you think of Alexis's comments to Fallon about the way that she was acting?
I just remember something about bad coffee.
Ghastly coffee.
Ghastly coffee.
Come right into my studio for a cup of ghastly
coffee.
No, yeah,
coffee. She says, you may... it's actually a great quote. Something about, like, you don't know what you have until it's gone.
Tell me something, Mother. Is this your way of finally saying you regret having cheated on my father?
Maybe.
That's not an answer.
Well, let's just say that maybe some women don't appreciate what they have until they lose it.
On the other hand, some women don't appreciate what they don't have until they get it.
She's just clearly at odds with her mother, and also she's like still doing this like sexual liberation thing, so, because it's all about Dr. Nick, right?
Yeah, and that Dr. Nick is still getting around.
I wish he'd go away. He's like such an obnoxious character. I never thought I could hate anybody more than that chauffeur from the prior episode or prior season, but
he's just like misogyny personified. Like the way that he speaks to women.
He's also got yellow teeth.
Yeah, when he laughs at Claudia. So, yeah, so he's still working his way around the Carrington mansion, and he's bothering Claudia. Or
well, that's his thing. He just, like, shows up like a bad disease everywhere, you know? It's like people are trying to just do their thing, and then he just, there he is on the scene, and Claudia's like, leave me alone. I'm trying to go for a swim, you know? And it's he's clearly just like a plot device, and I can't wait for his plot to be over.
Well, what I can't wait for it to be over, or wait to figure out, I guess I should say, is so Claudia's going for a swim. Now, she has really made herself comfortable in the Carrington mansion. She has no business being there anymore. She's not suicidal. And she's just like in the pool, working out, doing like whatever she wants. And she goes for a swim. She gets out of the pool. Dr. Nicholas Fettuccini is like annoying her. And then she walks away and she has...
She's like magically in some
magically
heels.
Magically in high heels. And like I didn't see her put
them on. I think
she
clicked her heels and then she was in her heels. It was like this
weird... I think
weird,
she was swimming in
I don't know
things.
If it was like bad continuity or good continuity, but anyway.
Well, but they were like click, click, clacking along. So I don't know. I thought that was so funny that like she got out of the pool and into heels.
Well, and she's kind of in like a wild swimsuit here. And again, it's like these like... this is callback to how she was like the sex goddess in the prior season, but... she's very much moved on from that in a way. Like her character, I don't know if they just kind of fell out of love with her when they were writing her character, but she kind of turns into a whole different character. And this is sort of like, this episode really is like the turning point, I feel like. But
I've spent a lot of time with psychiatrists. Matthew hired them. Matthew paid for them. Matthew's gone now. You're here. Except I didn't hire you, and I'm not the one that pays you.
Got that out of your system? Hmm?
Good.
No applause?
Touché. Look, Claudia, I'm not quarreling with your motives. This is why I keep it a dark secret.
We neurotics always cover ourselves with quilts that are sewn together with dark secrets, hadn't you noticed?
She's started to realize that Matthew's not coming back, Lindsay's not coming back. I mean, I think we all know they're not coming back, but her as a character, she's like... I don't know, finally realizing she's got to move on. And then she's, so I don't even remember this, but she's going to work for Carrington now? Was that mentioned?
Everybody's going to. Jeff's going to work for the Carringtons. She's going to, like, everybody's just moving into the house and some sucking off of the, you know, the Carrington tits, apparently, because it's like...
NostalgiaCon is a family-friendly event. I don't think you can say that.
But, no, but the other thing about Claudia in this episode, again, which is, to me, a turning point, she, you know, Steven walks in, and he's trying to, like, reach out to her and sort of feel out, like, what sort of relationship do they still have? And she's like, basically, love don't live here anymore. You know, she's like, no, I don't love you. And she pretty much shuts the door on him.
I didn't believe it, though. I think she's compartmentalizing her feelings so she can start to move on with her life after all of these tragedies she's been through. The way she responded, I didn't believe it. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, you know, because you've seen all of the episodes and I haven't. But I don't know. I think she still must feel something because she just went to such extremes to be in a relationship with him, you know?
Yeah, but I think that's actually, this is really closure for the two of them. And honestly, she does move on. But even not knowing that, to me, I thought it was very believable that she's kind of like shut the door on him. And I also think what proves that out is that he has the thing with Sammy Joe in this episode.
Yeah, we need to talk about that.
But, okay, so if you want to go to this whole, like, why did they title this episode The Miscarriage? You know, my big take on it is that Crystal's miscarriage is sort of an abandonment of a whole line of writing that's happened in the show up until this episode. And they're kind of moving on from, you know, season one was very serious and very dry. As good as it could be in certain moments. And then here, Crystal's incident is sort of like, we're moving on. We're abandoning that Like, this is no longer a pregnant idea in a way. And that's the same thing we see here with Claudia and Steven. Like, she's like shutting that down and she's going to become a very different character. Steven's going to go on with Sammy Joe. And so I think in like a lot of ways, these things all intertwine. And I think that's actually kind of why it was sort of smart writing that they made it the miscarriage. And even though it's in the background and it's not like the big action in this episode. So that's kind of why I see Claudia moving on from him. And I believe her when she says that.
Well, I will say I don't know if he was moving on, but he certainly was moving very quickly. I couldn't believe what Steven was up to this episode. So we see him with Sammy Joe at this party where there's a bunch of like crazy teens sitting on each other's laps and drinking alcohol.
A low rent house party with like a beer buster. And I like the couple on the couch. I don't know if the guy's name's Buddy, but I think he's kind of into Steven in a weird way because like he keeps like looking him up and down and he's kind of asking him way too many questions.
Yeah, you race, Buddy.
But that's the thing. He's like, you don't race. It's like sort of this like code for you're not the masculine stereotype around here.
There was a woman with short hair with a man sitting on her lap amongst all of these crazy friends of Sammy Joe's. But when this scene happened, I thought, like, wait a minute. Did Amazon Prime, like, skip ahead? Because it's like Sammy Joe has only been in Denver for, like, 2 episodes.
She's fast, as they say. So she can plug in anywhere and find a group of these hoodlums.
As Alexis says, a taste for the bizarre.
Yes, a genius for the bizarre.
Oh, yeah, a genius for the bizarre. But yeah, I just couldn't believe how things were moving so quickly. And then that also extends to the relationship with Steven. She borrows a car and goes for this ridiculous race car driving sequence around the track.
The racetrack scenario, I think, is like this, again, it's part of this code for like, how do we make Steven straight? And it's like, oh, we'll put him in a Mustang 2 and he'll go racing with the boys. And I think it's interesting, the buddy or whatever his name was that was saying this to him earlier, like rams him from the rear during the race. It's like, you know, pull up from the bumper or whatever, like as Grace Jones would say. So I don't know. It was just, I think it's all sort of subtext, but it's interesting. But like ultimately the gay therapy conversion works because he's like, I love racing and I love you, Sammy Joe. And it's like, what?
It was just so out of left field. I just felt like I had amnesia. Like, what? Where did that come from? Why did he suddenly fall in love with her and race car driving?
I feel like the writers just like did an about face on his character, Claudia's character, and the Sammy Joe thing is just, I think it's pretty egregious, but...
Well, now there is some dissension there because they go up to the lake house where he banged Claudia, and Sammy Joe is throwing herself at him. She is just... I mean, Alexis is right. She's a Trump.
Right, but you have to wonder, like, she's not really into him. She's into his money.
Yeah.
I mean, she's the whole poor side of town in Dayton, and she's jealous of Aunt Crystal, or at least aspirational. And this is like her door into that life now that she's there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, she does seem a little offended, but like, I can't be emotionally attached to their relationship because she literally just moved into the mansion and now she's like taking off her hot electric blue pants trying to mount Steven and he's not into it.
Well, it's interesting because she's like, what's the matter with me? Why don't you like me? You know,
because you have a vagina here. That's why.
But they're talking afterward and, you know, he says like in this life, you know, because she says, is it because I told you about all those boys I slept with? And he says, like, you know, in this life, we can't be ashamed of what we did in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he means one thing, and he means something else for her. But they're both sort of aligned in that way. So it's...
Well, and it's not even an issue just for the two of them. Alexis gets Blake involved in this. And that scene with Alexis and Blake is bone-chilling.
It's interesting because so far, Alexis has been like the cool mom, you know, that smokes and jet sets. And she wears all the best clothes, but then like,
and she took him to brunch and he told him like, I'm cool that you were gay or whatever.
Right. But she kind of regresses on that a little bit here. And I mean, she's only cool to a point.
Look, I've known young men who decide that maybe homosexuality is not their lifestyle after all. So they decide to settle down and marry. Except that they marry too fast. And they marry the wrong woman. Maybe even some tot that they pick up in a bar.
Let me break it down. Her issue is not with him being a homosexual or having homosexual thoughts or actions. It's with Sammy Joe. She's a woman that doesn't come from means, and she wants better for Steven. So I think that's what she has the bigger issue with. It's not the fact that he had a homosexual past. But
don't forget, when they were grouse hunting on the moor in the prior episode, she was trying to, you know, talk him into meeting some nice girls, you know.
Well,
of that, good
okay,
stock,
so that's my know? Next that's my next point. I think what she wants for him is a proper beard, because we're looking at this from the 2019 perhaps mentality, where that's like an old-fashioned thing that people wouldn't do anymore or shouldn't do anymore. But in 81, that's like an established social norm. Like, if you're maybe a gay man of means, you've got to find some wife to prop up and pretend to be
so
your
she wants to
partner.
Pimp him out to a wealthy daughter of a good family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, I'm conflicted. Like, I want to love Alexis through and through, but that's, you know, not,
I think that's
very
what
woke.
I like about her character, though, is she is troubling at times. Like, she's not a perfect fit for every, you know, positive thing. And I think this is one of those. I think another one's like where we always think like she's like the villain that wins. But sometimes when you listen to the things she says they don't really always hit their mark. So she's not perfect.
Yeah.
You know, she does have her fallbacks sometimes.
But what's interesting to me is this scene that the two of them had, Blake and Alexis. They are in agreement for the first time, I think, since she's returned back
well,
to the Carrington
Blake's
mansion.
Blake's just excited to turn his son straight, so that's all he cares about.
Yes, yes. Talk to him.
Pass on the family line, you know.
And I loved Steven's reaction, and I think Al Corley played it really well when Blake tried to, like, corner him in the bedroom and tell him to leave Sammy Joe alone. Like, and Steven's like, shut up, dude. I'm in my 20s. Like, I can do whatever I want. Like, I'm not going to have my daddy tell me how to live my life.
But can you when you're living under daddy's roof?
Well, not on this show. I mean, daddy's going to do whatever daddy wants.
I mean,
wants,
don't you think that's why everybody's living there? Because he's really, like, pulling the puppet strings on all these people in a way.
I know. It's like, well, on one hand, you get to live in this, like, fabulous mansion with, like, a pool and a chef and a wait staff and fruit cups for breakfast every morning. But then on the other hand, you have to deal with Blake freaking Carrington.
Well, I mean, don't you think that's why he offered that job to Jeff? I mean, he can get somebody from the other side, you know, from Colby Co. to work under his auspices, you know, so it's...
Yeah.
That's all part of Blake's power dynamics, but
well, Alexis has kind of like woven herself in and out, and she's even getting involved in like the Carrington business. So she overhears Andy, the attorney, comes in and is like, "Oh, you got to get your oil tankers back. They're in the Middle East, and this guy Ahmed is going to facilitate that." So I guess we're being introduced to a new plot here involving some sheik or something. I don't know.
Well, yeah, that's sort of at the tail end of a different plot, though, which is where she goes to Blake and she's having that conversation we were talking about. And she's like, oh, I'm going to go up to Crystal's room now and get that baby present so that she's not distraught
God.
When she comes
so
home from the
evil.
Hospital. And of course, she's just up there to like nose around and see what's
literally
going on.
Literally, like smelling literally crystals around. Perfume. Yeah. Like literally nose around.
And then she has that like sort of bitch fest with the butler, you know, which is interesting because that used to be Crystal and the butler's thing, but now it's like now she's having it out with the butler. I don't know.
And you know what? Joseph the bitchy butler can go because he is no match for her, and he tries to come for her every time, and then she shuts him down.
I still think he's got a secret shrine to her because, you know, he already had that weird like S&M conversation with her a couple of episodes ago.
He was kind of salivating.
Now he's like talking about, oh, well, you know, while you've been away, I looked you up in your family history and I read all the tabloids, and it's like, but why are you keeping a scrapbook for Alexis Carrington, your former mistress, you know?
Yeah, like, I love that we learned that her father was the hatter
to the king. I suppose this would have been Edward the VII or whatever, 1910-ish or whatever her father would have been around.
You have the receipts on that one, huh?
Yeah, so that historical math checks out, I think.
I don't believe it, but okay.
But yeah, so yeah, she moves on from that, and then she's listening at the door of the library, and now she's going to horn in on this like Ahmed Rashid character that I guess has taken the oil tankers hostage or something. I don't know. It's all just sort of like oil stuff. I mean, I never know what we're talking about with these things.
She does spend a lot of the episode on the phone. I think like we're showing slides at Nostalgicon, and I think
Manor.
We have like four pictures of her.
It's the best, like
talking on the phone.
So there's one where she's like sort of petting the lampshade with her fingernails, and then there's like another one where she's teasing her hair, and it's just like, is she sharpening her claws?
You know? There's one where she's in her nightgown. I think that was the scene, and she calls the hospital, and she's like, "Can I want to know about Mrs. Carrington's baby? Like, did she have a miscarriage?" And the woman on the phone
she's
is
like, "No, I'm not
like,
family, but I'm the ex-wife."
And then it's like click. And Alexis is just like, "How dare you?"
But see, that's sort of my thing with her, is like everybody like remembers her as this like perfect villain, but she doesn't always get her way. Sometimes she does, and a lot of times she doesn't.
I love that.
But I also like, she kind of like does this elegant thing with the cord as she walks around the sofa table. I don't know. She knows how to move. She's a very great stage actress in some ways.
Yeah. It's kind of hammy, but I still love it. And it sort of actually makes me long for the days, you know, here at NostalgiaCon, being nostalgic for like when a phone had a cord and it was like attached to something and it was like really big and you had to like squeeze your
hand around
it. My
grandmother would do this thing
it.
Where she'd take her earring off with the phone, you know, because otherwise it wouldn't be right there. I don't know. It's like just like funny. Like these were all things nobody would remember anymore, but
yeah, nobody has to deal with that anymore. You just have this like flat piece of glass pressed against your ear, but like really, and then when you would talk on the phone, because you couldn't like text or IM anybody, you know, so you would like be holding that thing for hours and hours.
The phone was really your umbilical cord to the world, and it's like, God forbid you didn't answer the phone, because you may not know what you're doing tonight. Your friends might ditch you because you didn't answer the phone and they're all off somewhere and you will never know.
Yeah. So. Or what you were going to do that night is just sit on the phone all night and talk to somebody else. But Alexis doesn't do that. She has, you know, places to go and mansions to insinuate herself into.
Now, she does have this other moment with Claudia, which this might be the only time.
I got so excited because I always wanted Alexis and Claudia to meet because I thought they might be friends or something.
No, I think they're like opposite signs on the zodiac or something. They just don't mesh to me. And it's clear here in the way that they wrote the characters.
Oh, yeah, Claudia wants nothing to do with her. Like, I guess Alexis's reputation precedes her because Claudia just shuts her down.
It is a bit of fun, though, because it's like, here's the mooches that hang out and like live on the Carrington dime, just sort of running into each other at the pool, these two like clearly are coming from two different directions and have nothing to do with each other.
Well, should we talk about our looks of the week? I think that's pretty much it for this episode, right? It kind of ends with a thud. Fallon is just pissed that Dr. Nicholas Toscani doesn't want to take her to the nurse's station.
She basically has her sexual liberation handed to her, you know? Like, Dr. Nick ain't down for all that, and he's going to call the shots. And so, I don't know. This is how she always, like, gets herself in trouble, whether it's with Michael the chauffeur or with Dr. Nick Toscani. You know, again, it's like how Alexis doesn't always get her way. It's like there's always these, like, pokes and prods, but, you know, these women are never, like, fully in control.
Well, like you were saying, this is what this whole episode was about. Nobody got their way. I mean, Crystal didn't get her way. Alexis maybe kind of got her way, but ultimately didn't. Claudia's not getting anything that she really wants. Steven's not. You know, he wanted Claudia. So it's kind of disappointing for everybody involved. I guess Jeff got a job at Denver Carrington. So yay, Jeff.
Jeff's a non-entity to me at this point. I kind of liked him in season one, but he's at this point, I'm washing my hands of Jeff.
Well, wait till he takes his shirt off again. You'll probably be interested again.
That never worked on me.
All right, well, let's talk about our looks of the week. So every week we choose our favorite lurk from the episode. This episode, I thought there was a lot of stuff to choose from. Nothing too fancy.
As we were saying about, you know, this show in relationship to the 80s, I mean, I think the clothes are certainly mirrored as the seasons progress. But I think that is sort of like what we always get into trouble with in the early seasons, because, you know, there's not any strong clothes, or sometimes there's not, at least. So, but I think it's interesting to sort of look at what everybody was wearing in this episode.
What was your lurk of the week?
I mean, for me, it was clearly Joan Collins in the, you know, the red silk dress with the gold accents.
Yeah, she kind of had like a Wonder Woman vibe going on.
Here's something interesting, though. I didn't realize this was a December episode, but she looks to me like that prepackaged bush of poinsettias at the grocery store, and it comes in like that gold Mylar wrapping on the pot, you know? So like, here she is like looking like that, but it happens to be Christmas.
And poinsettias are very poisonous.
I like a sort of oblique reference to the holiday season here, even though it's like, that's got nothing to do with this episode.
Right.
But yeah, you know, it's not very what we would call 80s. It's almost, you know, it could be from the late 70s, and basically the cut is.
Oh, I think the jewelry is very
80s. The jewelry is very 80s for sure, the way it's accessorized. But, you know, it doesn't have shoulder pads, and it's not power dressing, and it's not like what we think of when we think of Alexis, you know, Carrington. So it's, you know, it's getting there, but it's still, like, to me, one of the more outstanding, you know, costumes in this episode.
Well, and I know it's coming because I follow, like, what Alexis wore on Instagram. So I've seen lots of outfits that are coming. But, like, unfortunately, Alexis, since she's come back to Denver, hasn't been invited to, like, a ball or had, like, a really fabulous moment where she's had to dress up. Now, that said, she's still dressed
up.
She
still finds moments because she's very costumey.
She still just dresses up to, like, you know, go say bitchy things to Crystal in, you know, the dining room. But she hasn't really needed to dress up for any reason. Like, she's just been kind of milling about the Carrington mansion. Like, we haven't even really seen her outside of the studio.
I think all of her
mansion.
Best looks come when she gets embroiled in big business at Colby Co., which is not for another 3 or 5 episodes or something. Or maybe next season,
it's happening,
I don't remember.
This season?
Might be the end of the season or the beginning of next season.
Don't tease me. But yeah, I really like that too. I it wasn't my look of the week because I thought the, like, what is it, a dress or a suit? Was it pants?
It's just a plain old dress. You
okay,
know.
It's a dress. The dress didn't.
Well, it's interesting.
Kind of like,
it's you know, it's a straight pattern below the waist, and then it's pleated at the bottom. You know, so there's some sort of like interesting sort of couture details there if you really want to go there.
But I just really like the jewelry.
It's all about the accessorizing for sure.
Yeah, you know? No, the gold jewelry and the fact that the bracelets are kind of like cuffs, and it has another superhero kind of.
So what's the, what do we have next up on the, what was your
look of the week is the name of the segment? Yes.
Yeah.
Mine was Claudia Blaisdell's athleisure. Now, this is long before athleisure was a thing.
No. This is at the very beginning of it. This was when Jazzercise like exploded onto the scene. Like,
oh,
there was the whole thing with Olivia Newton-John. I mean, you know, this is like clearly right at peak.
Yeah, but I mean, they weren't calling things athleisure in 1981.
No, they were calling it like workout wear or something.
Right.
Know, like
so
some,
that's
some
what I'm saying.
Phrase.
Like,
yeah.
Claudia was doing athleisure before Gwyneth Paltrow or whoever.
What exactly does that mean? A velvet tracksuit and a headband?
Yeah, it's athleisure. It's athletic and it's leisurely. She's leisurely lounging by the pool in athletic wear. But anyway, so this outfit is amazing. She's got this insane headband on, this like purple headband that matches her like purple sweatpants suit.
That's pretty insane, I gotta say.
But it's like one of those headbands where it's like round, you know, it's not just like
braided.
Or it's like braided, but it's like roundy because like you're used to like the Tennessee headbands, you know, that are just like flat and have like a stripe around them.
Oh no, she went 5-star with this shit. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just goes back to like the fact that she's really embracing fashion and just living this rich lifestyle, even though she's like a suicidal wife of a geologist who left her, you know, a few weeks ago, months ago. I don't know how much time has passed since
it's
that
hard
trial.
To tell. I feel like in the Dynasty universe, like days could go by and nobody would know.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
It feels like it should be months, but it maybe has only been a couple of days.
I could theorize that this whole last season and then these last episodes could all have happened in like 4 days' time in some strange way.
Yeah, the only thing that throws it off for
me... It's
odd
the way that the show is paced.
Yeah, the thing that throws it off for me is, like, Sammy Joe just arrived, and now she's got all of these friends and is part of, like, the Denver racing scene, so it's kind of weird.
They're all time travelers, I think. So what else do we have? I think there's, like, some other things we wanted to talk about with the clothes here, no?
I don't know. Do you want to talk about some... Did you have any honorable mentions for looks of the week?
Well, we had talked about Sammy Joe the prior episode, but I do think she might even be wearing the same pants.
Those have got to be the same pants.
Yeah, it's these, well, that tells you something about her right there, doesn't it?
Tramp.
She's, yeah, this is like the turquoise poly sheen, you know, cigarette pants. I mean, this, again, like young women in this early 80s time, like that was like rebellion dressing. And it is a sort of a hangover from Farrah Fawcett, you know, which even goes down to her hairdo, I think.
The other outfit.
And wearing the classic cha-cha heels. I mean, can't get enough of those.
Yeah, you love a cha-cha heel. The other thing, the other outfit that I really liked is Claudia's swimsuit, which you mentioned a little bit before. But I thought this was like a really chic swimsuit for... You know, some
honestly,
lodger
I
to
think
be wearing.
I see young women wear this today at the pool.
Yeah, totally. You could totally wear that. Maybe
I think it was supposed to bespeak
heels.
A sort of an adult, you know, opinion on swimwear at the time. But I think now it's like totally. This is just what lots of young women would wear.
Yeah. And Crystal was in the hospital the whole episode, but there was this weird like flashback moment to her and Blake's talk about all the baby love and. It was like so gross. I wish they wouldn't have flashed back to that.
I don't know how this relates to clothes, but yeah, the two of them kissing is sort of like no chemistry, and it's very closed mouth and strange looking. Anyway,
yeah, I can't look at the picture. I'm gonna throw up my pretzel that I got at the Anaheim Convention Center.
Hey, that costs $4 now.
Should we open up to the audience? Does anybody in the audience have any comments about Dynasty? Do you want to come up to this microphone so we can?
Oh, thank you. My name is Robert. I've seen the show. It's been a while since I've seen the show, but I used to watch it. Have you gotten to the episode where Fallon was with the football team yet?
Isn't that in the first season?
I can't remember. It was either first or the beginning of the second.
Yeah, she mentions that, I think, in the first or second. Yeah.
Well, at the wedding.
Yeah, at the wedding. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, I love that. So, at the wedding, three of the football players from her dad's team come up and, like, kiss her on the mouth. And you can see Crystal in the background, like, look like, oh, my God, like, what is going on here?
Well, yeah, that was Crystal's introduction to what she was getting into. She was like, okay. Oh, this is an interesting family. You know, she didn't grow up like all of that, you know. But
there was, do the football players come back?
Yeah, I think there's a subsequent episode when Jeff confronts Fallon about her cheating. And he's like naming all her lovers. He's like, you were with the chauffeur, the doctor, the football team.
Okay, yeah. So I was going to say that might come back to her later. Yeah, because I feel like there's so many people she's cheated with.
Yeah. Well, and she was talking about with Dr. Nicholas Toscani that he reminded her of like a soccer player that she was like banging in Greece or something like that. So she loves an athlete.
Just a couple of my comments from your comment. Well, number one, as you know, Joseph, he's not the butler. He's the major domo.
Right, the major domo. We had this out the last time.
I'm not the butler.
He's even said as much, right.
And then with Sammy Joe, I think part of it, Sammy Joe is white trash, but I think she's also Crystal's niece. I think that's a big reason why Alexis does not like her. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Because... Yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah, that's right. Actually true. That's sort of like right there on the surface, but you're so caught up in just the snobbery between, you know, Alexis and Sammy Joe that, yeah, but you're right. She's totally just an inroad to Crystal.
Right.
So, yeah, that's actually right. One more reason.
And the other thing is, from my understanding of the show, the producers, or actually the network, pressured the show to change Steven into straight. So right. That's why there was a sudden turnaround. I think Al Corley left the show because of it. Because,
right. Yeah, that happens not too many episodes later, I think. Yeah.
I know that, and I've like read about that before, but I try to keep my opinions to just like what's on the screen, you know? And so to me, he feels very bisexual, right? Because he's been in a relationship with a man. He was in a relationship with Claudia, a woman, and they were both sexual, like physical and emotional relationships. So to me, I'm like, oh, he's bi, like that's the way it is. But I do know behind the scenes they were like, yeah, ixnay on the gay stuff,
right?
But I don't know, if you just watch the show, he kind of like, that's what he should be, right? You know, but it's also like, that was the 80s, now right. It's a totally different time, you know, sexuality is a lot more fluid and stuff. Back then people didn't think of it that way. So anybody else in the audience have any comments? No. All right, well, I think that wraps it up for our first ever live recording of Dynasty as They Want to Be. First of all, I just want to thank everybody for joining us here at NostalgiaCon. This was so much fun. You know, normally we record this like at our kitchen table, or, you know, in a hotel room, or, you know, in a car. Yeah,
I don't think I've been outside in like 6 months, so yeah, I'm glad we had this opportunity to leave the kitchen
home and watch Dynasty. Yeah. So this was really fun to do it, you know, in a public setting and share the love of Dynasty. And who knows, maybe we'll be back at next year's NostalgiaCon and we'll have some Dynasty cast members joining us. Unfortunately, Joan couldn't be here today, but, you know,
maybe she wouldn't return any of my phone calls.
Yeah, I did tweet her, but she didn't tweet me back. So, but yeah, so thanks everybody for joining us. And if you're listening, thank you for listening. Kyler, thank you so much for joining me. And I think that's it for this episode.
That's it, baby. Thank you.